Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Six Sens Podcast. Say that six times fast.
Welcome back, Hockey Capital. This is the sixth installment of the Six Sens Podcast. I'm accompanied by Tim, as usual. We have a lot of hot-button issues to touch on. There were two games last night, Tim.
Yep, two big games, so I'm told.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know which one to watch, so I just watched neither.
And we have a good feature guest this afternoon. We have the Senators' in-game entertainment director.
Yep, and it's not Corey Clouston's wardrobe selector. I don't even know what the term is for that, for personal shopper. What is it?
Wife.
Wife, yeah. You think his wife dresses him? It certainly looks like
absolutely.
That. Absolutely. All those pastels and lavender colors and stuff.
He did have highlights in his hair last year.
Yep. Well, if you look back at some of my old columns from last year, you can see that I consistently rip on Corey's two suits that he owned and didn't bother to press. Anyways, big show. Why don't we just get right to it?
Yeah, lots to get to. Let's do it.
A little music. Here we go. Graham, let's get right into this right away. We're going to spend the next probably 10 to 15 minutes here tearing a strip off the biggest moron in the world, Willie Desjardins. You know what? What the fuck is wrong with this guy, first of all? When I first heard the name Willie Desjardins, I thought it was the freaking groundhog that came out of wherever in Wyerton or something.
I haven't heard too much in the way of comments from the organization regarding his ice time. I would be fucking livid. if I had a prospect there and you're winning 6-1 against Switzerland and your kid hasn't even gotten a shift yet. Like, I can understand if you're playing like one of the upper echelon teams, but it's a semifinals game against Switzerland and the game was never in doubt. Why isn't he getting a shift?
It's beyond me. Absolutely beyond me why that happened. If I was Brian Murray, I would be absolutely livid. What a letdown. That's all. It's just a big letdown.
I think it's a shitty way to end the tournament.
Yeah, and it's a lot of pressure on the guy too, right? He hasn't been on a big stage in over a year now, since the draft, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy's got a lot to prove. A lot of people are watching him.
Yeah, probably since the Memorial Cup in 2007?
Yeah, 2008.
You're right.
2008, when they won it. But what I don't get about this is, how do you expect the guy just to be able to flick the switch and turn it on and get back into game mode after you've been fucking benched against Switzerland? I mean, I wouldn't even get benched against Switzerland if I was on that team, right? It's Switzerland. I don't see any rationale behind this, especially when you know that injuries are a possibility.
Oh, especially late in the game.
You might want to have some of your guys, your fringe guys, if you want to call them that. You missed my air quotes there, listeners. But these fringe guys who aren't playing a lot, these are the games you want to get them into. That's why you hear all this bullshit and cliches about keeping the legs fresh, keeping people focused, all that stuff. And they just threw it out the window. What the hell gives? Honestly. And to call out a guy on an issue so large and potentially devastating to his reputation as having poor mobility.
Well, that was a Bob McKenzie quote.
Yeah. What the fuck? How? It's like being a forward and they're like, well, there's definitely questions about his ability to shoot the puck. Well, no, there shouldn't be. This is your stock in trade. Like, maybe you're not as mobile as others, but it certainly shouldn't sound like you're crawling around on your hands and knees out there trying to chase down pucks.
The thing is, if his mobility is such an issue, why did they select him if they're not going to play him?
Oh, I cannot come up with this for the life of me. I rack my brain trying to figure this out. Is it because he plays in the Western Hockey League that he got picked to the team? Or maybe they benched him because he plays for an American team in the Western Hockey League? Maybe he wasn't drafted by the right Canadian team? Who knows? There's probably some backdoor politics going on there, I think.
It's disappointing. It's really, really disappointing.
I was really looking forward to having this be a really big showcase for him, because I've been dying to see the guy play at a high level. Right?
Oh, it was an opportunity to watch the kid on a regular basis. And
I want to know what we've got coming into next year.
See, is he,
like many others in Ottawa. Not that it's all about ratings and keeping people interested, but again, why bother taking the guy if you're not going to play him? How did this get through the talent evaluators? You know, surely someone noticed that his mobility was decent at some point. Maybe if it wasn't the Senators or the Spokane Chiefs or Team Canada, then, you know, someone would have picked up on this. Why is this all of a sudden an issue now?
I was looking forward to seeing him develop as the course of the tournament got better, because obviously, you know, you play Latvia right away and then you play Switzerland. As the competition improves, I was expecting him to get progressively better.
And you want a guy like that
on
the ice.
As the tournament went by, he got progressively less ice time.
Yeah, you want to see a big, mean guy out there against the States, right? In a gold medal game. That's, you know, like, you want to have, like, that's why Chris Pronger made Team Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we even going to talk about that later, by the way?
No.
Team Canada?
Fuck it.
Do you have any one sentence you want to say about the Team Canada roster?
Not at all.
I got one. Fucking Morrow.
Fucking Morrow. Yeah, I don't mind that. He's your token old selection, but whatever.
Yeah, anyways, that's enough. That's more than enough time spent on the Team Canada selections.
I guess what's weird about this whole Cowan situation, Tim, is the fact that some Senators fans will probably look at this tournament and they'll say, our ninth overall pick last year, he's not performing at a high performance level. Should we be concerned?
To quell your concerns about the performance of Jared Cowan at the World Junior Championships, two names here that might stand out at you. Carlo Koliakovo, Leafs pick, highly touted. Most points by defenseman in World Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
He sucks. Right? No good?
I'd go on a limb and say that the World Juniors are never a precursor for future NHL success.
I mean, it's nice to see guys like Erik Karlsson win the defenseman of the tournament. Like, it gives you some comfort for a few more months that things might be okay come October. You know, look at Karlsson. He struggled this year.
Yeah, there's definitely some concerns there going forward.
But yeah, people in Ottawa, they're just ready to attack anyone. Jared Cowan isn't even playing for Ottawa yet, and people are already all over him.
I think people have a tendency in the city to, like, look at an issue and want to, like, blame management right away. Like, if something goes bad, it's, like, just another feather in the cap for some of these people to complain about.
one of the interesting things about Jared Cowan is there's really not much in the Ottawa Citizen or the Ottawa Sun about Jared Cowan, right? The only time you see write-ups about the World Juniors is when it's just some stock story, a summary of the game.
Mm-hmm.
All these comments about Cowan are being fueled by like the message boards, by the blogs, you know, the odd radio show.
But that's what people do. You don't have an opportunity to watch these guys on a consistent basis, so they rely upon prospect magazines,
YouTube,
online magazines, YouTube. The opinions of other anonymous forums users. You know, it's just, you have to be careful with what you read and formulate an objective opinion.
So what does that tell you about the state of the Ottawa media right now when we haven't really heard a whole lot about Cowan? Do you think if this was Toronto and Kadri had gotten similar treatment, we would have been hearing about it in the papers?
Probably.
Absolutely we would have.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this so different? Why has no one stepped up to the plate and publicly acknowledged what's happened here? Our stud defenseman got benched against the Swiss, and no one says anything? Hopefully it gives the kid a little bit of piss and vinegar. Maybe he'll work on his skating over the summer.
Well, that's the other thing, too, right? He's coming off a major knee injury, and usually that takes about a year and a half before you're back 100%.
Coming up next, Dr. Nichols is going to
absolutely.
Examine.
Oprah, I'm going to be the next Dr. Oz.
I'm going to be the next Dr. Phil because I'm not a real doctor either.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, he hasn't a proper time to rehab it.
Yeah.
You know, like, he might be healthy, but he's not back to where he was.
Exactly. There is a big difference between being 100% and feeling really good.
Cowan's problems aside, the game was entertaining last night.
It was. How clutch is Eberle?
Very.
Are the Oilers going to have a dynasty in about 3 years?
I don't know. They always get those like prolific World Juniors guys who never really turn it. Like, you know, like those small forwards like Cogliano and Gagne, you never amount to anything. So maybe they're cursed.
Yeah, that's possible. They also have MSP. I only say is the acronym because I can't pronounce the guy's full name or even know what order it goes in. Maybe it's MPS. I'm not sure. Anyways, he looked like a hell of a hockey player, too.
He was on a great line, though.
Hey,
let's... I guess if there's a little silver lining, you can talk about the two Swedish forwards who are Senators prospects.
Silverberg lining? You were trying to work that out the whole time in the car and it didn't work out, eh?
The silver lining?
Yeah, Pettersson. Looks like we got ourselves the real deal here. We didn't really know a whole lot about Pettersson coming in. We knew that he had this kind of like workability project kind of guy who could be a player of, you know, Daniel Alfredson style mm-hmm. of hockey. But he really came through in the tournament. He's got a hell of a shot. He's got a laser.
He scored on 47% of his shots.
Yeah.
He was tied for the tournament leading goals.
His size didn't look like a huge issue either.
Well, that's part of the reason why he has that boomer bust project label attached to him. He's a bit stigmatized by that. But yeah, kid's got a great release. Looks like he can score. But size is always going to be an issue for a guy like this moving forward.
What really concerns me right now is our forward prospects. Apart from these two Swedish kids we got, right? That's about it. That's what we got in the tank. Jim O'Brien playing on the fourth line in Bingo beside Jablonski and Spencer. That's not going to pan out. That's not how you fast-track the NHL. I'm sorry.
They're really dependent upon Peter Egan right now. Like, outside of him, they don't really have one of those offensive top six. So they're really banking on these two Swedish kids.
Putting a lot of eggs in one basket, at least for one, that's over the course of two draft years, correct? That these two players were taken?
Yep.
And we took our defenseman in the first round. We got that all taken care of. Hopefully next year we can just focus on forwards, draft a whole bunch of them, and just hope like hell one of them can skate at the top six level. For the love of God, it would be even better if they could play center.
Would you move some prospect depth, maybe from the blue line, to move up in the draft and then take a higher selection?
I don't want to steal your thunder here, but I'll throw it out for you. You called me the other night and said, how about this? Carlson plus our first round pick to move up. What would you do that for? Would you do it for a top three pick, top five?
Oh, definitely top three.
Yeah, I'd be looking top two.
Whether or not a team like Carolina would ever want to do that's a completely different matter, though.
Oh, yeah, that's a completely different subject.
But I think I consider it.
But the idea of that is definitely quite appealing to me. Like, you can get good defensemen around and cheap. Good forwards, good centers, they don't come around every day. And I'd feel a lot more comfortable going forward if we had a couple of those. Why would you consider flipping a guy who hasn't even played half an NHL season's worth of games and our first-round pick for an unknown? Erik Karlsson, we know what he's capable of. Our first round pick, who knows what that could be. But why do you do that for Taylor Hall or whomever?
Karlsson's undersized. He's one dimensional right now?
Right now.
Right now.
Yeah, but so is Steve Yzerman, right? You know it's true.
Is this when you bring in a Jason Spetzer reference?
No. I'm still pissed about Willie Desjardins personally.
But I don't know. I consider moving Carlson. I mean, ever since the new cap era, you don't have players until they're 31 anymore. So, I mean, Carlson, if he ends up panning, is going to be making big money, possibly within 3 years. He's already got a year off his entry-level deal. I don't know. I'd consider it. I haven't exactly been blown away by him right now.
Yeah, and the other thing that's hard to realize sometimes, too, is that our team's garbage plus a second-round pick isn't always going to get it done. I'm sorry, folks, but we're not going to be able to trade, you know, Picard or Kuba or whomever that you don't like, Chris Kelly, for a second-round pick for, you know, a top draft pick. It's just not going to happen. We're going to have to give up some quality skill guys to get this, and a guy like Carlson might certainly bait a few teams into at least listening.
Especially for an older team like Carolina.
Yep. And it also puts them a year closer too, right? Like, you got to look at these teams like Carolina who
need some help on the back end.
You want to get a good on-ice product out quickly, right? You want to rebuild, but you want to do it, you know, as like a smart, marketable rebuild, right? Where you're really not ever out of it. You've got guys who are NHL ready, right? Just like the Holiday trade.
Depth over talent.
Exactly.
Now that we've talked to World Juniors a little bit, how about we switch gears to the Ottawa Senators when we get back?
Yeah, sounds good. During the commercial break, Graham actually admitted to me that he has never seen the movie The Blues Brothers. What a shock. This was the same reaction I had when my girlfriend told me that she's never seen the Godfather movies, nor did she want to see them. I mean, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to understand, you know, such a massive piece of where our pop culture
I'll save my embarrassment if Dan Aykroyd ever appears on this podcast.
Okay. We can have some wine and cheese for you then, too. He has a vineyard, in case you weren't aware. You can find it at the LCBO. It's got an obnoxious, old-school microphone you've probably seen tattooed on some rockabilly dude at your local bar.
And a vodka company, I believe.
Really? Dan Aykroyd does vodka?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't know Canada did vodka. I mean, in high school, we used to buy that Alberta Premium vodka, whatever it was called, Alberta's Premium Finest. Oh, that was horrible. I can't drink vodka anymore because of that.
Nice.
So another thing that really gets me going here is the goaltending situation. What do you make of this? I mean, people seem to be of a few different schools of thought here. Some groups seem to think that the goalies are just getting bad breaks, you know, too many power plays, goals coming in off skates, screen shots, you know, whatever it may be at the time that's, you know, causing these, quote, bad goals to end up costing us hockey games. People are also saying that it's our defense. They're not playing physical enough. They don't play strong enough in our own zone. The coverage is terrible. There's no pressure. What do you take from this?
I think it's probably a combination of the goaltender's not playing well, the blue line's not very good, and they have been unlucky. I don't think that's unfair to say.
Should we really be surprised with the way LeClaire has played, considering we knew exactly what we were getting into when we got him? We were getting essentially an untried and untrue goalie who'd had a good year. We knew he was injury prone. We knew he could be inconsistent. Why is everyone up in arms over it now? Is it because it's actually happening? Is this like a Kovalev type reaction? We know what we're getting, but we're still pissed off.
I thought he was playing well right before he took a puck to the face.
Yeah, he was.
He was starting to get on a little bit of a roll. He was healthy. And then bad circumstances. Like, I don't know. He takes a leave of absence and then he's come back and he's hot and cold right now. And what do you do?
Yeah, like I realize that goaltenders can be a finicky group as a whole. And, you know, as soon as you get into a rhythm, things start going well. You start putting up the wins. You get the bulk of your good stats during these runs. You know, your team goes places.
Do you blame Corey Kluston for yanking LeClaire after his bad start the other night?
Well,
Or should I say going back to Elliott?
I can't get over how much indecision exists within the mind of Corey Kluston. He always seems to be not even second-guessing himself because he's always so sure about it, or so he comes off as. But the inconsistency with the goaltending, like the Sun had a great article up the other day about how during games against teams like Boston, when it really matters, when you can vault them in the standings, you go with your number one because you're paying your number one to play those games. I think it was Gary Ott who wrote it, and it actually made a lot of sense. That's why you have these guys. Like, you don't start your backup quarterback in the Super Bowl. Why would you be starting your backup goalie in a meaningful regular season game? And another thing that always comes back with us, at least on our own time, is the lineup. How are the lines always in such disrepair and unorganized? No one knows who the hell they're skating with anymore. Like, you have a moderate idea of who you might be playing with because you played with them before. But that's it. I mean, it could be me. Maybe I'm just insane here and getting a little bit too much into Kluston's head, but
this is a little bit weird for me, Tim, because the only time I've really heard you criticize Corey Kluston is either because of his suits or his highlighted hair.
They're called frosted tips.
Frosted tips, I'm sorry.
Yeah. For reference, see Don Brennan, Brett Boone, or Alex Rodriguez. Good company. Good company. I like Corey Kluston. I think he's a good guy. He's got a lot of poise and maturity for his age and what he's done as far as being a hockey coach goes, right? Like, you'd swear the guy has been in the NHL for 40 years. He carries himself, you know, like a good GM. Like, you know, I don't want to say good GM, but a GM who's been around the block. We won't drop any names. And it's just so strange to see a guy who's so sure of himself all the time constantly changing and adjusting.
I'll give him credit, though. Like, his team's in fifth place, considering all the shit that's gone on this year. That is fucking impressive.
No kidding. If you told me this time in the summer that the Senators would be in fifth place,
with a little bit of a cushion.
With a cushion. And the injuries we've had, I would have been slapped silly. I'd be screaming for home ice. And you know we're going to have a good second half. Except all the games are on the road, which means fights will be down. So everyone out there who has Chris Neal in your fantasy pools, it's time to drop him because the penalty minutes are done. Unless you want to dick around with two-minute interference and hooking calls. But what do you think about the defense right now? A lot of people are blaming them for the goalie woes. People are saying that's Ottawa's weak point. It's not our forwards.
Well, obviously, the defense isn't very good. The bottom four guys that we have aren't particularly strong.
Just so we're all on the same page here, there might be some people who are as confused as I am. Just for the record, our top two, Volchenkov and Phillips.
Yep.
God, that sounds painful to hear, doesn't it?
I know, that's like a... That should be like your 3-4 pairing.
That was
on
just
a good team.
Jeez, 2006, it's a long ways away.
You know what's even worse is the fact that we haven't heard anything about a Volchenkov extension.
No, makes me wonder.
It's getting late in the year.
And
if you think about it.
And he never came out and said, I'm not going to negotiate past this point. If he did say that, you know, you might have some reason to believe that, you know, okay, don't worry about it. They'll get shit covered in the summer.
You know what Brian Murray might be doing, though? Is using this as a bit of leverage. Like, if he really wants to stay, he might threaten him with a trade towards the trade deadline.
Absolutely.
Kind of like what happened with Philip Kuba last year. It's like, well, if you want to stay, put your money where your mouth is. And
it's funny you mentioned Kuba because he's taken over as a new whipping boy recently. People seem to be all over him, calling him, you know, jack of all trades, master of none. The guy is a big guy on the ice, but he plays like he's Erik Karlsson. Maybe it's because he's playing with Erik Karlsson.
I appreciate his first pass.
Oh, God, no.
You have to say something nice, though.
Yeah,
that's what happens in Ottawa. If there's nothing else positive to say, just compliment his first pass.
Mr. Nichols is teaching his class, his first introductory class on Redonomics right now on the, you know, the importance of the first pass.
But if you listen to Gord Wilson start talking about Philip Kuba's first pass, you know he's playing like shit.
or Chris Kelly's smarts. Well, he made a dumb play, but believe me, guys, he's really smart out there.
Speaking of Chris Kelly, he's on pace for, I think, like 40-something points this year.
Fuck, I know. I saw that.
He is the perfect candidate to be dealt.
Yes, he is. I've been saying that all season. Like, when he's playing like shit, you deal him. When he's playing well, you get more for him and you still deal him.
Yeah, no kidding. It'd be the perfect opportunity to flip him.
If only Picard could step it up. Maybe but what can you really expect in return, though, from a guy like Chris Kelly?
Salary cap relief.
Yep, that'd be okay. That would be okay.
You get something back. Get a prospect and $2 million back.
And then blow it on some crap in the on the free agent market next summer.
But, I mean, if you could get out from under that contract, and then you have some of the other big contracts coming off the book after next year, then
Kovalev, Chichu. So, anyways, clean slate in a lot of ways. So what do you think the future has in store for Filip Kuba? What does he have to change? What has to go right for Filip Kuba?
Going forward this year?
Yeah, going forward from this point on.
Fuck, I'd love to see him get a new defensive partner. Yeah. I think Carlson's kind of sucking the life out of him a bit.
Who do you think Carlson should be playing with?
The bench? No, I don't know. Like, I haven't been too impressed with him. It goes back to me, like, at the beginning of the year, I never wanted to see him out.
I've wanted to like Carlson from the day he was drafted. I've really wanted to get behind the guy.
Oh, he's too green.
His play on the ice, though, he makes great moves and great plays from time to time, and he got that one nice goal.
He's an enigma.
He's not an enigma yet. He's not as experienced. He's not an enigma yet. He's not quite as experienced as AK, so he can't be an enigma until you've consistently proved that you're inconsistent.
There you go.
He's just a greenhorn who is going to hit free agency 1 year sooner, unfortunately. Thank you, Brian Murray, for that. I'm glad we could have a struggling Erik Karlsson to watch. And maybe a second young defenseman with destroyed confidence.
Jared Cowan.
Maybe they can play perfect together and they can mope. They can be the emo pairing. Either that or the cast of Twins, right? So, DeVito Schwarzenegger for you youngins.
Good movie.
I'm surprised you've seen that, actually.
After the Blues Brothers comment, yeah.
I think Kuba just has to, he's got to pick it up in all facets of the game. Like I said, master of all trades, jack of none. Man, you got to pick something, start using that body more, apply more pressure, pick up the intensity, fire a few more pucks at the net, stop and think for that microsecond and make a smarter move. Maybe have some foresight. What will happen if I do this? I know a lot of stuff in hockey is just quick reactions, reflexes, basically, right? When you get the puck on your stick, Kuba needs to take a second and take the hit, but make the smart play.
So I guess, as I mentioned earlier, the trade deadline is coming up. I mentioned that they need probably another top four guy. I'd like to see it. I don't know if it'll happen, but what would you be willing to move? We've talked about this before on the show, where Ottawa doesn't have a lot of flexibility in terms of assets that can go. What could net Ottawa something without having to mortgage the future? A second-round pick?
Second-round pick just mortgages your credibility. There's a lot of guys on the team who I would like to see go.
Yeah.
There's probably close to a 50-50 split of guys who I like on the team and guys who I'd prefer to see on other teams.
Mm-hmm.
I realize that's just not the reality, and not everything can be a video game roster. You're going to have to take some lumps from here and there. I think Chris Kelly at this point has become expendable.
Mm-hmm.
He's got high value right now too, I think. Strong defensive play, shorthanded, good penalty killer, and he's proving that maybe his stone hands have turned to a moderately hard sand these days.
He's no longer the Venus de Milo.
No. I think Ruutu could be dealt. I think he could receive a good package for him. Maybe not first round. Maybe if you were lucky and you got a desperate playoff-bound team who was looking for an agitator, they'd be willing to dish like the 30th overall pick or whatever. But otherwise, you're looking second round plus AHL fodder, I think, for a guy like Ruutu. Unfortunately, all the guys in the Senators, with the exception of like Mahalik and Fisher and Alfie and Kovalev and Volchenkov, you know, no one else is going to really land you a difference maker. They're not really going to get you that top four defenseman. And when you look at our top four, we need a friggin' number one defenseman. That's what we need.
I think that's why I look at Volchenkov and I look at that guy and say, unrestricted free agent.
Injury prone.
Not going to cost a team on the cap next year. So if anyone's close to the cap threshold right now and wants to add a defenseman, that's not going to hurt them long term. Maybe they flip some in Ottawa for Volchenkov.
And, of course, you'll have the conspiracy theorists say he'll go to the KHL because, you know, he's a red and all. He is, right? It's always a possibility. They're always flight risks, all of them.
I just don't want to see them blow the bank on him, though.
No, I don't want to see them do that either. I don't think that he's going to age well, personally. I think his best years are behind him.
Well, he can't move the puck.
He can't move the puck. His body's taking a crazy beating. He doesn't lay the body nearly as often as he once did. We've seen it this year. The only guys he can really cripple on the ice out there with his body checks are rookies who just don't know what to expect from him or who aren't paying attention. This guy isn't out there clipping NHL vets who have been around, right? Like, he isn't picking his spots, but he's only taking advantage of the situations that come to him on a gold plate.
That's a fair point.
And if they're all rookies, then fuck, there's always going to be a new crop of rookies, but it just goes to show that his game could be deteriorating. All right, so you look at a defensive core that's really lacking. None of these guys have really stepped up. They haven't had the same amount of injuries that the forward core has had, right? And then you get a guy like Kovalev who just kind of jumps out at you on offense, who's been great since the injuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit...
Since we didn't do a podcast last week, we couldn't really discuss his five-point performance against the Flyers.
The master of the enigma.
The master of the enigma. So, yeah, he had a four-goal, one-assist performance against the Flyers.
That sounds like a Dan Brown book, The Master of the Enigma. The Russian Orthodox Church exposed by Dan Brown. What an effort. The media... And the reaction in the city has
Isn't
just
it weird?
Been a
yeah,
swell.
I was going to ask you because it's weird that the media
and it's back again
spins
today.
It, but it's just great individual performance. But why can't he do this more often? He's the best. Why doesn't he do it more often? He's an enigma.
Alex,
and it fucking goes on and on.
What I don't get is, you know, same thing: 4 goals, 5 points, but he's done nothing for the first half of the season. Well, great. We all know that. That's not the point. That's not the story here. Like, who cares? You can say he's busting out of a slump. Or maybe he's a second-half guy. I don't know. But I just think it's really unfair. And it peaked last week after the game. And now it's kind of back to where it was all season, right? People are starting to get on Kovalev again.
Yeah, if you look at it, it's tough to evaluate the guy right now based on what he's done. Because, I mean, through what? Like, 42 games, he had 11 goals. And then for the other 40, he had none. But, I mean, if he winds up the year with, like, 25 to 30 goals, nobody's going to fucking complain after that. Like, in retrospect, it's moot. It's a moot point.
Absolutely. Like, does anyone care how many goals Wayne Gretzky scored in the month of October versus the month of, you know, February? Mm-hmm. No, it doesn't fucking matter, right? They're all goals at the end of the day.
Considering the fucking alternative to starting the year was Ryan Shannon and Jonathan Chichu on the second line. Imagine where the fuck we'd be without this guy. Forget our podcast. Like, look at the team.
Man, and Kovalev recently, obviously, has done great work with Ryan Shannon, who we need to talk about as well. It's good to see Ryan Shannon coming out of his shell.
Yeah, he's had some fortunate passes. Nice to see a few go his way.
Yeah, did you read that article in the paper last week? No, it was longer than that. It was before New Year's. I think it was the 26th.
Where his uncle told him not to suck?
Exactly. That's the one right there. And he came back, and he's been on a tear ever since. So what do you see from Kovalev when... the other guys get back, when Alfie and Spezza get back, is his role going to be diminished a little bit?
Oh, Kovalev,
fuck,
no.
I just said diminished role. It really does get into your conscience. Do you think
that line's not going to switch, though.
Do you think a guy like Kovalev is going to, does he embrace being the guy the same way that, like, Danny embraced being the guy?
Wasn't that kind of like the knock on him in Montreal last year? Was that they talked about him having the C instead of Koivu?
Yep.
Another guy who's rumored to Ottawa. Oh, good stuff.
We're not even going to address that rumor, right?
No.
No, okay.
We just did, but no.
It was vague, at best.
But yeah, I don't think that line's going to change with Kovalev, Fisher, and Shannon.
No.
Nor should it.
I think they solved a lot of problems right there with that
second
line. I just
hope that the return of Alfredson and Spezza can kickstart Mahalik, who's absolutely stank the joint out for the past 16 games. I think he has one goal.
I think he realized that the more goals he scores, the more he's going to have to talk to the media around here about them. So he just probably just cooled off for a little bit after that hat trick he had.
People are going to start to refer to him as an enigma if he doesn't start producing.
Well, they can't pronounce his name properly anyway, so they might as well start calling him Enigma.
There's too many guys like that. It's so weird. It seems like in Ottawa, all the scoring doesn't click at the same time.
Where's Nick Foligno these days? What's he doing? I know he's back.
He's on the, isn't he on the first line with Regan and, that's not the first line. He's on the line with Mahalik. No wonder Mahalik's not scoring.
Yeah, no kidding.
Have you noticed that Mahalik has like this penchant for tripping and falling?
Yeah, I've noticed that. And kind of strange situations where you wouldn't really envision a guy needing to take a fall. Or
no, like
fall,
he's really
period.
He's really tough along the wall. But like anytime he's in open ice and there's like a puck in his feet or there's a rebound lying around, he falls like inadvertently.
Yeah, the way Mahalik kind of just drops sometimes inexplicably. I'm thinking of other good Senators droppers over the years, the guys who just couldn't skate well enough to stay on their feet at all times. Bruce Gardner comes to mind immediately.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Fast as the wind, but man, that boy didn't know how to put on the brakes. I remember going to a game with my friend Jim. We were just sitting there. Every shift Gardner got on, wait for him to fall. And sure enough,
Todd White could never stay on his feet.
Nope.
He was always knocked down after faceoffs.
He wasn't a strong guy.
No.
That's his problem. In a nutshell, that's Todd White's issues. Jarkko Ruutu.
He's always falling. Lots of dives.
He's a good diver.
Yeah.
It's nice having a diver on the team, eh?
He's no Derek Roy.
As good. Speaking of Ruutu and his penchant for, taking an inexplicable fall when the referees are looking, can you remember a Senators player in modern history who's had the same penchant for diving as Ruutu?
A little embellishment?
Yeah, just making sure it gets noticed more than anything.
Off the top of my head, I think Dacko took a dive after Lindros pasted him into the end boards.
I've always said that. I've always said that guy should have got up, skated away, and there's been a man about it, right? I mean, you don't want Lindros to come back and get you again, right?
I'll never forget that photo of his face in The Citizen. That was fucking disgusting.
No kidding.
Disgusting.
Say what you will about Jarkko Ruutu and, Dackel taking his dive against Lindros there, but Ruutu's an extremely entertaining guy, right? Like, he really gets people buzzing. You notice when he's on the ice when you're at the games live.
Fun name to say.
Yeah, a great name to scream.
No kidding.
Couple beers in you, scream out Ruutu real loud. It's a gem.
So, how about we go from a little in-game entertainment to some more in-game entertainment from the stands?
That was way more smooth than I thought you could ever pull off. That was good.
We'll be right back with the Ottawa Senators Director of In-Game Entertainment. Stay with us. And we are back on the phone with Glenn Gower from the Ottawa Senators, the Director of Game Entertainment. Glenn, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Not doing too bad.
I'm doing okay today. It's a good day.
It is a good day. Well, except we had two losses last night, right? We had the loss against the Bruins and the Canadian junior team lost as well. So,
bad goaltending all around.
Well, bad nights often lead into good days, so.
Try not to dwell too much. But, all right, Glenn, I guess first things first, I guess Tim and I are just interested in how long you've been at your job, and maybe you could give our listeners an idea of what your job actually entails.
Okay, well, start with the first half of that. I've been with the Senators since the season after the lockout, so this is my fifth season with the Senators. And before that, for a long time, I worked for the Ottawa 67s, doing kind of a similar job there. And what the job is basically to produce all of the stuff that you see on the video scoreboard, everything that you hear, all the music and national anthems, and basically all the contests and promotions and so on that go on inside the arena on a Senators game night.
Glenn, how is it when you first started the job after the lockout? What was the state of the in-game experience at Scotiabank Place by your own accounts? And how did you envision it to change when you took over? What kind of goals did you have to improve the in-game experience at Scotiabank Place?
Well, I'm not sure there was any drastic changes that we tried to make. I think just our goal always has been just to make sure it's any night out is going to be a fun night for fans, you know, whether you're a family going out to the game or whether you're a couple of guys just going out and enjoying a night out. You know, we want to make sure people are having a good time, that there's a lot of interactive stuff going on, that there's a lot of prizing, and also that the focus is always on the game itself, on the hockey, you know, so that we can be showing some great replays. And, you know, when a player like Kovalev scores four goals, that the fans will get to celebrate that in the arena.
Sorry, you mentioned there that you cater to crowds like families and, you know, guys going out for a night out on the town. How difficult is it to cater to these, you know, quite diverse markets when they're really only united by the game of hockey itself? How does that make your job difficult or easy for you?
Well, actually, you've got it right there. Everybody's united by hockey. You know, there is a there's a huge demographic swing, you know, for everybody from, you know, we've seen newborn infants on the video scoreboard, everybody to, you know, somebody celebrating an 85th birthday. So the demographic is all over the place. But everybody is united by the love of the Sens. Everybody there is a Sens fan. So everything we do is kind of rooted in that idea that we're there to cheer on the team and really support the team and make sure everybody has fun in the process.
Is that what the Kiss Cam is there for?
Sure, that's part of it. I mean, you know, Kiss Cam is fun. Everybody gets a good laugh out of it. Probably you're a little embarrassed if you get onto the Kiss Cam, but, you know, it's all part of the night out, and hopefully it's something that you don't see anywhere else and something unique to coming out to a sports experience.
Glenn, when you took your job, obviously you've probably been to a number of sporting events. Has there been a city that's set the bar for you in terms of an in-game experience, and has this helped you with your kind of vision with what you want to see at Scotiabank Place?
Yeah, I try to get a lot of live sporting events whenever I travel somewhere, and I don't think there's any single city that does everything right. You know, every stadium, every arena does a little thing that's a little bit different. It's their own tradition and something that they really do well. And you know, what works in one stadium may not work in another stadium, you know. So it's really every city has their own traditions and their own strengths and their weaknesses. And, you know, we do, I mean, not just for game entertainment, but everybody in the Sens organization, whenever we get a chance, we like to see what other teams are doing right and try to adapt that and make that work here in Ottawa. So, I mean, there's teams, you know, Montreal, they have great music at the games. If you go to a game, I always say, oh, man, the music's awesome there. You know, a team like Toronto or Detroit or New York, they do such great things with the tradition. You know, when they're honoring players or when they're doing looking back with alumni or doing features on the scoreboard, they have a great job recognizing that rich heritage that they have. You look at teams out west like the San Jose Shark. You know, I love it when that giant shark head comes down out of the rafters, and, you know, they've totally made their own traditions in a non-traditional hockey market. And, you know, every rink has their things that I love, and every rink has that special thing, so...
Speaking of traditions, I know last year there was a bit of a sore spot with some sect of the Senators fan base that had concerns that you guys had abandoned the Senators theme. Maybe you can detail why you guys got away from that tradition?
Well, it came out of, every year we do season ticket holder surveys and casual fan surveys. So we ask people who are coming to the games, what do you like and what do you not like? So we do surveys. We also get feedback all the time from fans via email. We do read message boards, so we're always monitoring what people are talking about. And one of the things that had come up several times from fans was, you know, that the Sens theme song, we need a song that pumps us up more at the start of the game. So we said, well, it wasn't an easy decision, because obviously that song had been in place for years and years. The Sens theme was, you know, part of a tradition for a lot of people, but we thought, you know what, enough fans are giving us this feedback that they think it's time for a change. Well, you know, we're going to try something a little bit different. Won't get rid of it entirely. We'll still use it in the game. But when the players come out, we're going to use a different rock song and see if that makes a difference in the atmosphere or the mood of the building. So we did that. And as you know, there was a lot of feedback and an email campaign and a petition to bring back the Sens theme. So, you know, while the decision originally was made to respond to some of the fan concerns, we got more feedback in the process that said fans would like to keep it. So, you know, later on that season, we brought it back, and the Sens theme leads out the Senators every game when they come out onto the ice. So it's back, and, you know, for the foreseeable future, we have no plans to change it up. So it's still part of the tradition here.
So hopefully it tied in with the time the Kalusta came in and Ottawa started to win again. So we'll give you full credit for that.
All right, sure. Well, what do you guys think? What do you guys think? Are you pro Sens theme, or do you think it's – are you among the fans that told us it was time for a change? What side are you guys on?
I absolutely love that theme. I always called it the Roman theme. But then again, you know, I grew up going to games at the Civic Center and then the Palladium and everything else after that. And it was a huge part of the tradition of hockey in Ottawa. And it's really hard, I think, to come up with tradition, to be the one who initiates tradition. And how are you going to start that? And I felt like that was one of the few things that Ottawa really had, you know, to look back on and say, this is something we've always done. This is part of our experience. This is part of our team. And I love it. It's just like hearing Stone Roses open for Manchester United, right?
Yeah, it had a nice little cheese factor to it. I like it. I've always liked it, yeah, because I grew up with it as well. So,
yeah, no, I mean, it's, well, obviously, we found out over the last year, you know, it is pretty popular. You might be surprised, about once a month, I get a request from a fan who wants to use the song at their wedding, either like when they're going down the aisle or like at a song at their reception or whatever. But anyhow, so not only is it important to Sens games, but people are using it in their personal lives as well, which is kind of fun.
That's absolutely fantastic.
That's insane.
I'm curious as to how, you know, I'm assuming that one person's probably a bigger Sens fan than the other in that relationship. But, like, how do you sell the other on that? Do you tell them it's just a classical piece that you pulled? Or
actually, often it's mutual. Like both the husband and wife are both huge Sens fans, and they're doing it together. You know, there's a ton of people who even ask us if they can get married at center ice before the game, and so far we haven't done it just because there's some logistical and timing issues that would prevent it. But, yeah, there's a lot of husband and wife Sens fans and season seat holders and everything. So,
I guess switching gears a little bit, recently we were approached – I'm not sure if you heard the story or have talked to anyone else in the organization about it, but we were approached by a group who call themselves the Real Sens Army.
Yes, well, I know the group, yeah.
I guess we weren't looking for you to comment specifically on the incident involved, but I guess, like, what they're trying to do is create a section of the Scotiabank Place that's kind of dedicated to loud and loud fans who are passionate about the hockey team, and I guess they want to have their own kind of, like, cheering section to get things going and create a little bit more of a lively atmosphere in Scotiabank Place. We're just wondering if we get your thoughts on the issue, or...
Well, I don't know that I can say too much about it. I do know about the incident because one of the members of the Real Sens Army had emailed quite a few of us at the Senators, and I know someone from our marketing department has been in touch with them. And, yeah, we know about the plans, and anytime fans want to come in and encourage a lot of noise in the place, we're not going to say no. So I think someone's meeting with them, or there's a phone call with them soon just to talk about some of our ideas and see what we can make happen. I remember the game that they were at where they were making a ton of noise. I do remember it because I think they were over in like 303 or 304 over in the upper corners, you know?
Yeah, I think that's
right. And I mentioned to Stuntman Stu, who sits right next to me in the game, I said, those fans over there are awesome. They're really loud and making a lot of noise. So, yeah, I mean, if they're coming to the games and trying to get some Go Sens Go going and cheering on Alfie and everything else, then, hey, we're all for it.
Oh, absolutely. I think that, you know, you can never fault people who are out to have a good, honest, fun time without hurting anyone or offending anyone. And I think that should be, you know, especially encouraged in a young hockey city like Ottawa. I think that's really important. And Graham always goes on at lengths about the experiences of hockey games at the collegiate level in the United States, specifically at the
Michigan.
University of Michigan.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a lot of, you know, organized cheers, loud, boisterous fans, and your favorite part, which is the band.
Yeah, it's all inspired. It all kind of ties into the school band, and they kind of just play their own songs. And for each song, there's different crowd movements. There's different, I guess they do different waves, different cheers that are play specific for a hockey game. And it's just it's a fantastic live experience. I don't know if you've ever seen any of the YouTube clips.
Oh, yeah.
I've
seen it on TV. We had a college game probably 4 or 5 years ago at Scotiabank Place, back when it was Corral Center, and there was a band there, and they were great. We're hoping one of these days to bring over some of the group from Gothenburg who were at the game. Do you guys remember hearing stories about that from the game the Sens played in Sweden?
Yeah, I guess
they had
drummers,
and like they had a whole section of people who were just, you know, making noise and pounding the drums the whole game. So, you know, we'd like to someday bring that group over for a night and you know, have them, let them loose in the arena and see what kind of noise we can make there.
Well, hopefully they bring those cowbells that you always see them always going nuts at the club games in Europe.
Yeah.
So Glenn, about the music at the Scotiabank Place currently, how does one go about selecting music for just the most eclectic audience you could possibly ever consider finding?
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about with demographics, right? You've got people of all ages, people who like country, people who like rock. I mean, it's so, our feeling is you can't focus in on one single genre, you know, like Calgary Flames. If you listen to their playlist, it's very heavy rock, and it works in Calgary, and the fans love it there. But here in Ottawa, that really wouldn't work because the makeup of our crowd is a lot different. So what we try to go for is we try to find music that's familiar to the majority of our audience. So something that you've heard before, whether it's on the radio or at a party, stuff that's upbeat, you know, that gets people excited, and interactive is another criteria as well. So something you could clap along to, or sing along to, or dance along to. It's all over the place. I mean, you'll hear the organist playing some polka. You might hear some country music when Chris Phillips scores, and then you'll hear "We Will Rock You" by, you know, Queen back from the 80s. You know, so it's all over the place. But the commonality in there is that people recognize and know the tunes, and they're fun tunes that you can interact with. So that's kind of the loose criteria for the playlist, and obviously a lot falls into there.
So one thing I wanted to know is about like the older, like you mentioned the rock and roll, the songs people know, a lot of that stuff, I don't know if I'm just pulling us out of left field here, could just be called, like, you know, your classic rock, your classic pop music, which more often than not was rock back then. And Ottawa's fan base right now is really growing. And we had Bruce Firestone on a few weeks ago, and he was telling us about the rapid growth of ticket sales by the people who were ages 18 to 34 now, who grew up with the Senators. How important is it to capitalize or to interest that market with the music and maybe try and branch away from the older clientele?
Oh, I think it does. I don't want to give the impression that all we play is classic rock. I mean, we like to call it classic hockey music, you know, so you might hear The Who, you might hear The Queen, but, you know, you're also going to hear more recent stuff like The Tragically Hip or, you know, Thousand Foot Crutch now. You're hearing it all over the stadiums, all over Canada at least. One of Mike Fisher's friends are behind that band. So it's not so much classic rock as it is classic hockey music. You know, and we really do try to look at our playlist and make sure we're playing a mix of stuff that was put out in the last 5 years, stuff that was put out in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and, you know, as long as it fits the criteria that a lot of people are going to know it and it's not too obscure, then it's likely going to get onto the playlist.
I'm not sure if you read The Sun. I just wanted to ask you, because Don Brennan had a little column there where he just threw out in one of his last throwaway paragraphs a little story about how he wanted, or he wouldn't be surprised if Kovalev started celebrating his goals to Michael Jackson's Thriller. And then Rutu came back with a little snippet about what he doesn't know what his song is, maybe something by Celine Dion, but which,
well,
maybe,
yeah,
a little bit of a grain of salt there, I'm guessing, based on his sense of humor.
Obviously the Kovalev was, you know, a reference to his moonwalk, right? The other day after he scored the four goals, but the players actually do have a say in their goal sign. At the beginning of the season during training camp, we give them a questionnaire for music, and we say, give us five songs you'd like to hear during the player warm-up. Is there a song you'd like to hear when you score a goal, or an artist that you'd like to hear when you score a goal? and a few other questions about music. Some of the guys are right on top of it and fill it out and send me a million song suggestions, and here's what I want to hear when I score. And some of the guys never get back to us just because, you know, they listen to everything, and it doesn't really matter. But I'd say most of the guys this year at least gave us some artists that they'd like us to choose from for the goal song. For Kovalev, his goal song is an edit of Personal Jesus by Depeche Mode, which is one of his favorite artists. He likes 80s music, so he'd probably be okay. I'm sure he wouldn't mind if we played a little bit of Michael Jackson somewhere in there. And Rutu's goal song, you don't hear very often because he doesn't score very often at home, seems to have scored most of his goals on the road this year for some reason. But his goal song is Whiskey in the Jar by Metallica. He's a huge Metallica fan. So I've asked the players though a few times, like, did you notice your goal song, or do you know what we even play? And every player has always answered to me, I'm just so happy I scored, and all the crowd noise, I can't even tell what the music is. You know, I wouldn't even know if there's music playing. You know, we're so excited and into the game at that point that we're not even paying attention. So I think player goal songs are more for the entertainment of fans than so much for the players there. You know, sometimes it's a little bit different, but sometimes we'll get player requests for warm-up songs, and they've got, like, inappropriate language or something, so you have to cut that out. But, yeah, there was a player a couple years ago who wanted something, and we were kind of like, yeah, that's maybe not the strongest pick for a goal song. It wasn't quite as bad as picking Celine Dion, but it was close.
I guess one of the constant complaints we've ever had on our website in terms of the in-game experience is people complaining about the current state of the scoreboard. Are there any plans to upgrade it in the near future?
It's been something on my radar screen since I started. The problem is the cost of a new scoreboard. The one in Montreal, I don't know the exact cost, but it was upwards of $5 or $6 million and add on a little bit more because they had to upgrade their facility for HD and a new control room. So you can imagine in this economic climate that you know, it's not exactly the greatest time to be going out and dropping $4 or $5 million on a scoreboard. But the one that's currently at Scotiabank Place is at the end of its lifespan or nearing the end of its lifespan. So, you know, we're hoping within the next within the near future, like say within the next 2 or 3 years, that we'll be able to make a financial case to upgrade it. But yeah, it's something we hear from fans a lot that they'd like to see a new scoreboard, and usually when the fans ask for it, eventually it will happen. You know, one of the biggest challenges, I think, is having variety from night to night. You know, like it's for season seat holders who are there every single game, you know, how do we make it fresh so that they don't feel like they're seeing the same contest or promotion or videos all year long? So that was one of our goals this year, was to try to mix things up a little bit more and make it different from night to night, while at the same time making sure we still had some common traditions that always happen that you could look forward to.
Has it been extremely challenging? Because I know when we were talking to Bruce Firestone, like Tim mentioned a couple of weeks ago, what he was insinuating is that part of the problem with getting people out to the games these days is like technology and television quality has gotten so good that people want to stay at home now to watch the game instead of having to drive out to Scotiabank Place. Is it really challenging for you these days to create like a fresh product, to like make it an event to go out to Scotiabank Place now?
Yeah, I've heard Bruce talk about that, and I think he's probably onto something there. I mean, certainly this year where we've had some games with the lower attendance, we've looked at what are all the factors, and definitely that's one of them, is that, you know, people are investing a lot in their high-def TVs and home theaters, and I'm sure that's a factor among many. What it has done is changed a little bit on how we do our in-game things. Like we're trying to, I said earlier that we focus on hockey, but we're trying to show more replays. So that's one thing that's different from home to the arena is usually you see more replays at home. This year we've shown more replays on the scoreboard, and I think we're closer to what you get from TV. Little things like the showing replays while the play is under review, definitely that's something that the league responded to. I mean, if you can go home and watch TSN or Sportsnet and see the controversial goal or non-goal, you know, 20 times on the highlight reel, or go and watch it on YouTube, well, the league responded to that and said, all right, you know, we should be showing this in arena on the scoreboards. Another area that we're trying to keep fans up to date on is out-of-town scores and progress. You know, we always have up in the upper signage, we have the out-of-town games the scores updated, but we've been trying to show more live highlights as games are in progress. And if you're at the game last night, we were showing the World Juniors game live during the intermissions and post-game and doing live updates throughout the game. So trying to do little things like that to respond to the technology as well. And then the other thing, and I know Sixth Sense is on Twitter, and it's responding to fans via Twitter, both on an off day, but also during the game. You know, Stuntman Stu, our announcer, is on Twitter pretty much constantly during the game. I sometimes feel like I have to use Twitter to send him his announcing cues, you know? Twitter to at Stuntman Stu, read the announcement, you know? But and I'm on Twitter as well. I mean, obviously my attention's with the game, but when there's a bit of downtime, I'll look in there, and sometimes there'll be a fan in the stands who's requested a song, and, you know, we might try to get that on if we can. So
that's cool, actually. I guess one of the things that you have going for the in-game experience as well is that you don't have to worry about Pierre in between the benches. We don't have to listen to him.
I don't know. Does that add or take away? But we've talked about actually adding the timing is hard to work out, but trying to get a player interview right after the periods, because one thing you have on TV but you don't have at the game. There's some logistics timing-wise and so on, but, you know, maybe later on the season we'll be able to implement something like that.
Tim and I have created a list of questions, and we just want, like, a quick, rapid response, like, first thing that comes to your mind when you hear these questions.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
What is the best concert that you have ever been to?
The Who at Scotiabank Place a few years ago.
Excellent choice. This isn't so much a question as it is first word that comes to your mind when you hear this name. The name is Johnny Shaka.
Dance. That's kind of obvious, isn't it?
I think that's about all you can say about Johnny Shaka. Like, what else needs to be said about Johnny Shaka other than dance?
Isn't he the amazing Johnny Shaka?
The amazing Johnny Shaka, that's right. Okay, next question.
Next up, Order of Canada.
I guess you just have to fill in the last word of this sentence. When I'm working, I cringe when I press the play button on. And we're looking for a song.
Yeah, you're looking for a song? Cotton Eye Joe.
Yes. Amazing.
I'm clapping.
But every time we play it, people get up and they dance and they clap their hands and they smile, and Stuntman Stu next to me starts doing this really crazy, embarrassing dance. So people respond to it. You know, as long as people are clapping along to it, we're still going to play it, fortunately or unfortunately.
I've seen people dancing to that song since grade 7 middle school dances all the way up until a few weeks ago when we were at the Caps game and we got to see it live in person. Never fails.
Imagine Queen never existed.
Okay.
And Ottawa wins the Stanley Cup. What's the first song you'll play?
It's You Too, Beautiful Day.
Hopefully Alfie's lifting the cup by then as well.
Absolutely.
There you go. That leads right into the next question. If you were making a mixtape for Daniel Alfredson, what would be the first song you put on it?
Something by ABBA.
Same question, but for Eugene Melnick.
Wow, he's a... what's the band that came to Scotiabank Place when he opened the building?
The Eagles?
The Eagles, thank you. Life in the Fast Lane.
Life in the Fast Lane. If everyone is at the game and the sound meter comes on the scoreboard and nobody claps, will it still explode?
It will not explode.
Oh.
But that would never happen. That's such a hypothetical question. Every time the noise meter comes on, the crowd goes nuts.
I feel like I should have seen that question on Philosophy 101 exam, Graham.
That's very very expensive technology, too. I have questions for you guys.
Absolutely. Perfect. Let's hear them.
So if you could be the DJ at Scotiabank Place, for both of you, what would be the one song that you would play?
That's a tough question, Glenn. That's a really tough question. I think I would play The Jam, That's Entertainment, as my song.
That's tough because it puts you on the spot. No?
It does.
I wasn't expecting any questions. I'd probably play a little bit more David Bowie.
Oh.
And what song would you take off of the playlist?
Anything by Green Day or Nickelback.
Yeah, I was going to echo Nickelback particularly.
But it's tough because that's obviously like top 40 right now.
And that's, you know, we talk about classic hockey songs. Nickelback is, you know, kind of a... linked with hockey music in Canada here. So
yeah, and as much as, you know, one or two people in a studio may or may not like that band, they're an incredibly popular band for a reason.
So Jared Cowan doesn't like them either.
That's true. He doesn't.
Well, we won't be using them as his goal song then when he makes the NHL.
Apparently he likes the Euro dance music, or so we were told.
Yeah, he was listening to some house music.
We'll have to ask him for his request.
I guess on behalf of Tim, thanks for coming on, Glenn.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thanks for combining two of my favorite things in music and hockey. That was a great interview, Glenn. I really appreciate you doing this with us today.
All right, it's good to be on the show. Thanks, guys.
Okay,
you're very welcome.
People like to rip on the Senators in-game experience, right? Like, it's been highlighted to us a little bit more because of our Real Sens Army, not the RSA, email we got recently. That's kind of put it into the public limelight, and apparently, the Senators pay attention to this stuff. And after you talk to a guy like that, it's hard to really come down on the organization and say that, you know, they don't do a good job, these people aren't trying, you know, they can't relate to their fans, because clearly, you know, Glenn Gowers, good guy, obviously loves his job.
But that's a part of the problem with his job, though, right? Is he can't appeal. You're not going to be able to appeal to everyone with everything.
Not.
Like, if I asked him for like the top 10 songs that I'd love to hear at a hockey game, that's probably not going to.
Exactly. And, you know, you'd probably have five people in the whole arena who would get it, right?
Yeah.
And every other person in that arena, like the way music has gone these days, and it's so diversified and micro, and everyone loves like these small things, like, oh, I love, like, you know, Austrian heavy metal that's influenced by Led Zeppelin, and that's it, and that's all I listen to. Like, you know, everyone's so different these days, it's going to be really hard to come up with this, which is why we end up with the insufferable Nickelback and Green Day.
But that was a good interview.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Definitely interesting to get a little bit more of the marketing and, you know, experience and almost sales side of the business, right?
Well, I guess the good news is, though, for the Senators, is that Corey Clouston looks like a keeper, so the organization might be able to save a little money there. Stash that away for a new scoreboard.
If you were a director of Game Entertainment, Graham...
Less buyouts for Gerber and Emery as well.
Would you call yourself the maitre d' of Scotiabank Place?
The maitre d'?
Yeah, like you're in charge of making sure everyone's having a good time.
Showing everybody a good time. You're the pimp. You're the pimp of Scotiabank Place.
Absolutely. I'm not sure if he'd ever call himself that in particular, but... No, you can say a lot of good things.
Perfect. All right. So, any closing thoughts?
Not too much. Looking forward to going to the game on Saturday. Going to go see the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see whether Glenn hooks you up with a little tune.
Yeah, hopefully. If he plays the jam, then I'll never knock the Senators' music selections ever again. You can play 9 Nickelback songs for every one jam songs, and I'll be happy with that.
Right on. All right.
Next week, you got anything cool looking up on the week?
Looking up in terms of stuff for the website? No.
No. Personal life? No.
No, not really.
Okay,
nothing,
good.
Nothing I want to look forward to.
Good. Edit this for your
sucks.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, she'll be happy to hear that. But next week on the podcast, I think we have Wayne Scanlon from the Ottawa Citizen.
Oh, that's right, Scanlon.
And the Feather Duster. And I'm hoping that we'll have one more guest, but it's pretty hard to track him down right now. But I'm hoping for two. So I'll cross my fingers on that.
Scanlon's good enough for me. One's exactly. All you need.
But thanks for listening, guys. Keep reading the website.
Keep requesting songs.
Take care.
Apparently he takes requests. All right, take care, everyone.
We are the boys from Little Eden. We are the heart of Saturday night. Drink from the fountains off the fireworks. We sweat and moan for a better life. We like a chorus that's sung together. We like our arms and our brother's arms. Call every girl we ever met Maria, but I only love Virginia's heart. We sing with our ears stuck.